Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back my really good friend, Chris Miles. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. We just saw you not long ago in sunny California at the Collective Genius Mastermind.
Yeah. If nobody else knows, Mike can really shake his hips. I'll tell you that much, you know.
I watched him
do a little ballroom dancing, you know, when I did an instruction when I spoke that time.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Chris is a professional ballroom dancer in his other life. Before he became the infinite banking guru, the money ripples, he was doing ballroom dancing. Tell us a little bit about that. And of course, you had to stand up and teach us, show us a couple of moves and had to wake us up and force us to move a little bit.
Especially after lunch. They gave you and me like the worst time slot to speak, didn't they? So yeah, you have to wake people up a little bit. But you know, as a little minor correction, I never hit professional status. I was trying to stay out of the professionals, but I stayed in the amateur route and still was one of the top in the nation in the amateur circuit, right? So I'd done that for several years and up until the early 2000s, then stopped doing it and end up going more the route of what we teach to people today, help them get financially free. Also now I'm more of a marathon runner. So I'm doing a lot more of that than I'm doing anything with ballroom dancing.
Yeah, but it's an amazing journey. I have to attest, and I know people listening to the podcast, they can't see it, but both Chris and I presented at the Collective Genius in the afternoon after lunch. People were sleepy and tired, and Chris got up and had everybody get up and had everybody move and taught us a couple of moves, how to make the hips moving without forcing yourself to move the hips by keeping the right posture, and then, I guess, bending the knees in the right sequence.
That's so right.
That was really cool. Appreciate that. But now let's talk about sort of what's the latest and greatest in the world of Chris in the form of money ripples, infinite banking. What's new in this world? What's changed? Interest rates are obviously up. So how's it impacting infinite banking? People doing more or less? What's different? What's better? What's worse?
Yeah, there's some, it's a lot, for the most part, it's better, right? I mean, because higher interest rates mean also higher dividends that you earn on the infinite banking. You know, when you have your whole life insurance policy, they're not market driven. So even if stocks go down, nothing happens to the whole life policies, right? They're irregardless of the market, they always perform, they always go up, they're guaranteed to go up. But with higher interest rates, that's also good for them because they make a lot of their money and they pay their dividends based on higher interest rates. So that's good for you. What's not as good, of course, is when you borrow from it, because now if you try to borrow from a bank, you can borrow one of two ways. If you borrow from a life insurance policy. Now, when I say borrow, I don't mean you're borrowing from your term insurance policy, which is just a death benefit. Whole life has a death benefit, but it also has this tax-free savings account inside of it that you can actually either withdraw money from, which is always an option, or you can get a line of credit against it, either through the insurance company or through a bank. And right now, the banks, because the interest rates have been higher, you don't want to get a bank line of credit against your life insurance per se, because you might be paying easily 8 to 9% on that money. Where with the insurance company, I'm only paying about 6% on that money. You know, now someone might ask, well, Chris, why would you borrow your own money? And the answer is you're not borrowing your own money. That's the key difference. People will try to tell you that you pay yourself back and all that stuff in the infinite banking space. That's not true. What you're really doing is there is a line of credit that you get from the insurance company. Now, the reason you want to get a line of credit against the policy rather than just withdrawing the money, because if you withdraw the money out of your policy, you're no longer earning interest on that money, right? Just like if you pull money out of your savings account, you're not earning interest in your savings account anymore. You've pulled it out. You're now just making money in that investment, which is great. That's still a good thing. But the added benefit with using life insurance as your savings account for investing is that when you borrow against the policy, which means you're getting a line of credit from the insurance company, they're giving you their money, but at the same time, your money's still in there growing compound interest tax-free. You're still compounding your money at a good rate because, again, interest rates are higher, while you're also borrowing at a very reasonable rate too. And so now you're able to take that money and make money in your investment still. But at the same time, you're able to get a net gain. If you do it right, you can get a net gain on your policy while also making money in investment. So, like for example, Mike, if someone goes and puts money with Tempo Fund, they use money from your savings account. Yeah, they'll make money from your fund. But if I use my life insurance to go invest in your fund, right? And I use that instead, I'm still making money inside my life insurance policy because I'm not pulling it out because I'm getting that line of credit. But now at the same time, even though I'm paying them interest, I can net gain on the interest that they pay me, and then I still make money in your funds, right? So that's kind of the cool advantage that I can make an extra maybe 1 or 2% rate of return on top of the returns you're already going to pay me because I use this strategy versus just using my savings account.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification. So the wisdom is to open whole life infinite banking policy the way you structure them with a lot of cash value, and then borrow against that policy from the insurance company, not from the bank, from the insurance company. And that loan is secured by the cash value of the policy. And
That's right.
the current rates you said around 6%. One question, folks who borrowed who established his policies a few years ago, and the insurance company had contractual 5%. Can they jack it up to 6% today, or is it still it's contractual what the rate on the loan that they give you is? Is it floating with the way Fed funds rate floats? Because basically,
Yeah, it floats. Yep. So if each year, now they only change their interest rates usually once per year, usually at the calendar year. So if interest rates are going up, they'll announce usually like around November, December of the previous year saying, next year we're going to pay X percent on our dividends. And then they'll even announce if there's a change too on the loan rate, they might even announce the loan rate changing as well. So yeah, they'll do that about once per year if they don't keep it the same. And I like to use insurance companies that don't change a whole lot because there are companies like the Northwestern Mutuals of the world, you know, where they love to like inflate their interest rate 1 year and then they crash it down the next year so they can still afford to pay, right? Because they're losing money that year to try to drive up more sales and then they have to, you know, get a much drastically lower dividend rate. And I don't like those kind of companies that play those dumb little games with you. You know, I like ones that like to stay very steady, you know. So like, for example, one company I've used a lot, you know, like they've paid between 5.75 and 6.34% for over 15 years, for over the last 15 years. Even during the recession, they were still paying like 6.34% when rates were even a little bit higher. And they're at 5.75 now, but they'll probably raise up over 6 in 2025 because those interest rates staying up higher for longer. You know, and there's other companies that, you know, they're paying
who are those
6% or
companies
so right
that are
now,
more
right?
steady? Who are the steady companies? Is it like MassMutual, these
Exactly. MassMutual is great,
PenMutual?
especially if you're in New York. You know, MassMutual is a good one. That's kind of the number one I choose for New York State. Outside of this New York State, because it's like its own country in New York, as you well know. Outside of that, I might use PenMutual a lot. They definitely give me, and it's not because they pay the highest dividend either. They're the ones paying 5.75 right now, where Mass is paying 6%. But because I can adjust the cost more easily with PenMutual, I can even make it to where it still grows faster in that cash value component, that savings account. It can grow faster because there's less cost coming out of it than what MassMutual will charge. So that's the thing. Never just go off of the dividend, whatever they claim, right? Because it's not about the dividend. It's about how much can we adjust those costs? How much can we lower those costs so that the money can grow faster?
Yeah, that's a very powerful argument. And I'll say this many, many, many years ago when I was ignorant, I didn't know. My first impression, or at least what people have told me about these whole life or any other of these insurance policies, that they are fee heavy. They were fee riddled policies with a lot of money, a lot of commissions for the agents and for the companies. And there was some truth to that, right? If they're structured the wrong way, they can be expensive on fees. But the difference is you do things very different. You are anti-Wall Street. You do things differently from what traditional agents do. In other words, you design these policies to benefit the investors more than they benefit you as the agent. And that's an important difference, because ultimately what you want is long-term relationships with folks who work with you. And you're focusing more on their benefits rather than your own benefits, and lowering the fees wherever you can lower the fees.
That's right. That's one thing that's, yeah, it's tough to see because, you know, even if agents have the best of hearts, right, they're only taught to do what they're taught to do. And usually it's the insurance company teaching them how to do it a certain way. I actually like to refuse to learn from my insurance companies that I work with and where I'm independently brokered, because I want to figure out how to do it like an investor, not like an insurance company wants me to sell it, right? And that's a key difference. So there's very, very few people even know how to minimize cost of a policy. And of that small percentage, even the ones that do know refuse to do it because it cuts their commissions back so much. And the truth is, most insurance people you see out there, that is how they make their money. They don't have other streams of passive income coming in where they say, I don't care if I don't make a dime on this policy. I'm still, I got to make money. I got to feed my family. And so they'll find something in the middle. Maybe it'll be good for you, but it won't be the best. And that's a key distinction where we had to make it a rule in our company that said, listen, even if it means that we get paid literally like, we get paid about 22% of what another agent gets paid, we're okay with that because that means that at least we're getting the client the best deal. And the truth is, when the client gets the best deal, they end up doing more, a bigger policy anyways, because they know they get a better ROI. So the funny thing is, even though we get paid almost a fifth of what other insurance agents get paid on doing a policy, people will do bigger policies because they know they make a higher return. And we end up making sometimes the same or more than those other insurance agents because they're just ripping people off.
Yeah, that's a very fundamental view. You take a long-term perspective, and really your policies serve different needs. You're serving investors, real estate investors and other investors who use the policy as a way to park cash and then borrow against the policy to be able to make investments. Yeah, exactly what you
That's right.
described at the beginning of the podcast. While other agents sell it as, I don't know, life insurance, some of them sell it as a way to retire. But they're solving a different problem. They're communicating differently. And of course, they've been taught by the insurance companies that are looking to maximize their own profits and maximize agents' commissions too. So there's nothing fundamentally wrong with either party or you versus the other folks, but you solve a different needs. Because you solve a different needs, you do things differently. And it is not as attractive on the surface, but on a long-term basis, these investors can actually, as you said, open second, third policy, and it makes a lot of sense. So
Absolutely.
let's continue the discussion. How do you structure these policies? In other words, when you work with a couple, because it works as a both a death policy and a savings engine. So is it better to do it on a woman than a man about the same age because it's a less expensive policy? Is it better to structure the same thing but use a kid and put the policy to the name of the kid? In essence, use the same way to borrow against the policy, jam the cash into the policy, but reducing the general overall cost. And because it's still life insurance, so they really underwrite it based on the age, the health, gender of the person who is taking the policy, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting nuance because it always is case by case how we work it. But for example, I mean, it's not too uncommon that whoever the breadwinner is, that's who we go for first. Because one, I mean, it's like you said, it's providing an insurance still, even though we don't really focus on the death benefit as being the primary thing. It's almost like icing on the cake. It's still, you want to make sure you're protecting them too. But depending on the situation, right? Women do statistically live longer. Therefore, it's almost like women have this, and I say this in not a bad way. This is a good way, that almost like if you're talking about in golf terms, they have like this 2 year or 3 year handicap, right? Because they live 2 or 3 years longer, their costs are cheaper. So if I were to have two spouses, like a husband and a wife, say they're both 45 years old, the thing is, the wife will have lower costs than the 45-year-old husband, even if they're both in perfect health. Why? Because they live longer, so their insurance costs are cheaper. The only time it gets even is if that wife were, if the husband were 45, the wife would be like 47, 48 years old, then they'd be about apples to apples, pretty much even, right? Because women live longer. So sometimes if someone wants to get policy on both people or maybe just one, sometimes we might choose the wife because in many married couples, the wife might be the same age or younger anyways. And because she lives longer, as long as she's in good health, she might get the highest ROI compared to the guy. And you could put in a lot more money into those policies too. So it does depend because it depends on, who's earning money, who's not. There's little nuances that the insurance company wants us to do, but that's things we can play with. With kids, you're right. Kids, I mean, of course, they have a much longer life expectancy, supposedly, right? They should, at least. And so they're cheaper insurance costs, but that's also kind of a catch 22 because their insurance costs are so cheap, you also can't put in as much. Here's a cool thing with adults, right? With at least with the way we design the policies, you can put in up to 25% of your stated gross annual income per year into a policy. So if you make, say, $200,000 a year, you could put in about $50,000 a year max into these policies. That's how much you can contribute, way more than a 401k. And it's more like Roth IRA taxation, right? Is this after-tax dollars you put it in, gross tax-free comes out tax-free? Well, with kids, you might be maxed out about 10 or 20,000 a year for the kids because their insurance costs are so cheap, and they don't want you buying a bigger death benefit on the kids than what the parents have. Because they're going to say, wait a minute. Because remember, underwriters, people that are, the insurance companies, they're only looking at the death benefit. They don't look at it like we do as investors. They look at it as a death benefit. So they're thinking, why would your kid need a bigger death benefit than you? You make the money. They don't. They don't need that much death benefit, right? So there's never like an unlimited amount of money, of insurance you can ever get because insurance companies will stop you. They will question you, nickel and dime you to make sure you don't get overinsured, so to speak.
That's a very
So just be
interesting
aware of
argument.
that. But yeah, you could definitely do on kids, and people use this instead of 529 plans because it's not gambling the stock market.
Yeah, that's a very powerful idea, and of course, it's important to know limitation. And I didn't know that they would, I guess, question if you try to insure one of your kids who doesn't work and they don't have any income, they're going to
Yeah.
limit them pretty hard how much they can purchase in the insurance policy. I guess you can do it
Yeah.
gradually. You can buy multiple policies. That's one of the ways to do this.
Yeah, they generally try to limit the death benefit for the kids about three quarters of whatever you have as the adult total between all policies that you have.
Yeah, understood. But all this requires a little bit of planning, a little bit of a thought process. So for those folks who want to do more, they probably should just chat and figure out their own individual circumstances and what's
Yeah.
doable, what's not. All that is really, really powerful. Next question. How do most people use these policies? So besides the saving engine, and it continues to grow over time, is it better to just try to get one big policy, or is it better to do laddering or multiple policies over time? Of course, you got to have a good organizational system to track and make sure you keep the payments. But is it just better to try to jam as much as you can, or just do enough where you feel comfortable, and another next year do a little more, next year do a little more, and again, the goals obviously are different, right? One is if you're using it for to build the cash value and have access to cash, versus if you're doing, I don't know, using as a retirement plan, not planning to draw from the policy. It's a very different objectives, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's so one thing that's crucial with our policy is that, and this is a mantra in general, you can always pay less into a policy, but you can never pay more than how we design it. So, for example, if you put the max amount that you can't contribute to it as 20,000 a year, almost like you're trying to contribute to a 401k, your minimum, depending on your age and health rating, is probably going to be somewhere around $4,000 or $5,000 a year. So that's what you're actually required to put in, is that 4 or 5,000, even though you can contribute up to $20,000. But if you ever want to contribute $21,000, if you've been max funding it, they'll say no. They will return the extra $1,000 back to you. Otherwise, you'll trigger taxes, which we don't want, right?
Yeah,
So,
you're overfunding the policy, which will cause problems. So
yeah, you
you
overfund
go
even more than you're
less, but
supposed
you
to
can't
overfund.
go more, but you have a minimum.
That's right. So whatever we set as a limit, that's a limit. But that doesn't mean that down the road you can ladder it, like you're saying, where you could get another policy. So with our clients, again, we're always looking at it from a passive income approach, right? We're trying to figure out how to get your passive income up, also using this policy too. And so, for example, somebody only is doing 20,000 a year, but then they start investing. Maybe they got a quarter million, they're investing, it's kicking off 10% return. Now they got this extra 25,000 a year, trying to figure out what to do with. Great, we can do another policy. It could be on them, it could be on a family member, like a spouse or a child, business partners, even if you want to do it that way. You can actually get another policy and then set that up. So even if it's on yourself, you can have as many policies as you want, as long as it doesn't go above the total death benefit of what the insurance companies think you should have, which is usually like no more than about 20 times your annual income. But I'll tell you, the way we design them, because we try to minimize the cost and we minimize the death benefit, it's almost impossible that you're going to max out in the insurance side. So I only recommend people get new policies as their cash flow improves. As they have more cash to put away, then they can start doing more of it.
So, quick question. So, this makes total sense. It does need ongoing reviews and periodic planning to adjust for individual situations, for live events, and so on. What about, do you ever mix up term life as an additional insurance to protect breadwinner, somebody who's the key income earner for the family? And let's just say it's a man. Man is getting a policy, but the policy is cheaper for the spouse, and the savings mechanism policy is mostly with the woman, while the man still needs additional term policy. I'm just curious if you mix up some term policies ever to enhance death benefits for just in case, because term policies are generally a lot less expensive. Now that money is completely wasted, but at the same time, it's such a small amount, and the rest of the money could be put on a whole life. Do you ever mix it
Yeah.
up?
And so, yeah, with the way we design our policies, that's part of the secret is that there's ways to blend like a term insurance rider into the policy where it's cheaper cost, but allows you to put in more money, right? But that's not all of it. And usually it converts it inside the policy while you're growing it. But I mean, even my own example for myself, just a few months ago, I set up a new $3 million 10-year convertible term insurance policy, right? So I got a
What does
new
it mean,
10-year term.
convertible term insurance policy? It can convert the whole life at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's non-convertible term insurance, which means it doesn't convert to anything that's permanent. It could be, even universal life, even though I don't recommend those typically because they're a little bit more risky. But it can convert to whole life. And so I bought a policy. Like for me, I got another Penn Mutual term insurance, convertible term insurance policy that I could convert at any time during those 10 years. And here's the cool thing. And I'm not saying the cool thing is if I ever get cancer, for example, and it's terminal or whatever it might be, right? If I get cancer and I'm no longer insurable, like I can't get new insurance, if I have that convertible term in place and I have it as this perfect health rating right now, I could convert it even after I have cancer and go ahead and convert it at that perfect health rating to a new policy, and they cannot deny me. I just, in fact, had this happen with one of our clients where she got a term policy a year ago. Then the next year, her husband said, "Hey, let's get a whole life policy on her." So I forgot about the term policy. So we said we were going to get this new whole life policy, and then all of a sudden they rejected it. Something had happened with her health over the last year that has said, "Nope, you're no longer insurable." Denied. Well, I can't remember what it was, but as I was going through the system, I found her other policy. I said, "Oh my goodness, she's got a term policy." It was the same day that we got the denial letter. I said, "Here's a term policy. Let's go ahead and convert this." When it showed her at the perfect health rating, convert it now to the policy we're going to get. And the funny thing is, a couple of days later, it came back approved at that health rating. So I put in the application the same day they denied it, and they couldn't deny it because it's a convertible term policy. So that's one of the benefits that even if cash flow is tight, if you're paycheck to paycheck, I don't recommend people get whole life. I think you should be able to put away at least 5 or 10,000 a year before you get whole life policy in place. But if you're paycheck to paycheck, get a term. And even in my case, I got a $3 million term policy on myself because I said, "Hey, I've already got some policies maxing out, but let's just get this term in place because I want to protect my family first and foremost. But down the road, I may want to get another policy or a couple policies I could break off and out of this thing and having the whole life policies that I know are guaranteed for me."
That's really powerful. It's all in the design. It's all knowing the insider business, insider opportunities, what you can't do. And that's the power working with you. It's that simple. So for folks who have light liquidity, they can work with you with the convertible term into whole life. And folks who have ton of liquidity and they're looking to deploy capital safely. The best way to put it, and I think you taught me this, I forgive me. I think you said this. This is I'm now quoting famous Chris Miles, the author of Infinite Banking. No, I'm just kidding, but you are a celebrity. You are definitely a celebrity. And then, so I'm quoting you. You told me a whole life is not really a insurance policy. It is a savings. It's a conservative part of your investment portfolio. The best way to think about this is whole life insurance policy ownership. Is investing conservatively, having conservative investment that works in good times and works in bad times. It's a steady eddy, consistent conservative investment, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's not sexy, but that's what makes it sexy, right? Because you can always count on it. It's always going to be there. Even lately, banks. I mean, banks have been failing and still failing even to this day. And now there's even stress on regional or smaller banks because of all the commercial debt they're holding. There's a lot of stress there. And so to know that I have a money in a place where I'm safer than what the bank's been doing, especially some of these regional banks, I know at least I can store my money, even if it's my emergency fund money, I can keep it there, let it sit there. I can still access it whenever I need it, but it's going to earn a lot more than point nothing percent in my bank account. And it's safer and it's also protected from lawsuits and creditors. So if somebody sues me, they could get to my bank savings account, but they cannot get to this money. And same thing, if I'm trying to get my kids, I have a daughter that's a senior this year in high school. She's, went to go qualify for scholarships. The cool thing is they couldn't count any of this money in my life insurance policies as an asset. Even though it counts as an asset when I go to apply for a mortgage, right? It doesn't count as an asset when I'm trying to get a school loan. Now, if I had a 529 plan in my daughter's name, they would count that against me and give her less money for that scholarship for that school. But as a result, because, that money's being held elsewhere where they won't count it, that's where I get a full benefit. So there's so many different reasons why to have it as part of your portfolio. Not to mention, like you said, at least it's one place, it's guaranteed. It's going to pay at least, 5-6% tax-free dividends. That's good. I mean, I wish I could get that in the stock market sometimes,
Everything you said just massive. It's a it's protected against creditor. It is not counted towards cash available to pay for college for kids. And I'm not sure, maybe it even applies into some circumstances where folks apply for long-term care, and if they look like they got too much cash in the bank, that may be a challenge too. But if they have money in the life insurance policy, that's probably not going to be considered, because long-term care is super expensive and very applicable to elder folks with a lot of net worth. They want you to drain your net worth savings. Imagine you have a gigantic policy with millions of dollars of cash value versus that cash in the bank. It's a remarkable difference, right?
That's right. You got it. And that's another thing too. I mean, even when we talk about long-term care, right? I mean, some people say, "Well, am I too old for this? I'm 55." No, I'm almost 47. I'm almost 50, and I can still get a great policy. Now, if you're in your 70s or 80s, you probably wouldn't use this strategy as like what we're talking about here, like where you're trying to overfund it and invest with it. But still, there's definitely options there, and like I said, we can always insure other people too.
Another really important benefits for the ultra high net worth, right? The dollars that are part of the life insurance policy, they're not counted as part of the estate, if I understand this
That's
correctly.
right. Yeah, they're counted as your total estate, but they're not taxed in the estate. So that's one of the great benefits. So many times people, if they're worried about, whoever, if it's Republicans or Democrats in office, whoever might be trying to ruin your life with taxes, the good news is that the insurance money is tax-free. And whatever you get it at, tax, based on the time that you set up the policy, whatever the tax rules are at that time, you are grandfathered in. So unlike IRAs and 401ks, where they can change the rules on you at any time, they cannot do that with life insurance. So that money is used to become a tax-free money that comes in that might even help you pay off any estate taxes if they decide to charge them to you.
Yeah, it's like a Roth IRA that they can cancel the Roth status, because it's been discussed a few years ago. There was
Yeah.
a number of proposals to put a limit on the Roth IRAs, et cetera, et cetera. So
That's right.
very, very powerful. Chris, I appreciate your wisdom. We are past the time, as well as like all good things come to an end, and so does this episode. What's the best way to reach out to you? I know it's moneyripples.com, but email, social media, what else? How would folks reach out to chat about their situation and their policy and their needs?
Yeah, best way is just reach out to us through moneyripples.com, which also has a lot of continuing education. You also have like the Money Ripples YouTube page that has our podcast as well. So you're more than welcome to follow our podcast, the Money Ripples podcast too.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great podcast. I've been a guest. You're a guest on my podcast. It's a great adventure, and really, you entertain people. Besides all this educational, financial literacy, anti-Wall Street, you also, I guess, can do a little bit of move your hips and do a little dance here and there. So from time
Yeah,
to
you really
time,
can't
you can
see it
come
from
back to this.
this camera angle, right? But yeah, we definitely do something like
You
that.
gotta do this once in a while. You get all these smart people in the room, and they're all brainiacs, and you gotta wake them up and just say, "Hey, all right, everyone, get up. They do it in Japan, middle of the day. Everybody moves. So you
That's
had a
right.
feeling. I'm grateful for that. It was both really cool, practical, and really exciting to be part of the presentation where instead of getting some boring spiel, we got to enjoy a little bit of moving around and hearing your story. So thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.